Today is Saturday, September 6th, and this is the World Socialist Website.
Trump's dictatorship in the American oligarchy. On Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump held a public dinner with representatives from five of the six largest companies in the world, all multinational technology companies headquartered in America, pledging to expand their profits and accepting their praise and thanks. Trump, on his best behavior, pledged to make it a lot easier for the assembled billionaires to get your permits. The oligarchs, in turn, profusely expressed their appreciation for Trump in supporting our companies instead of fighting with them, as Google co-founder Sergey Brin put it. The executives thanked Trump on 30 separate occasions in the space of 15 minutes. They extolled his incredible leadership. Bill Gates, Microsoft, repeatedly expressed that they are grateful. Brin and AMD CEO Lisa Su for his support. Thank you for being such a pro-business, pro-innovation president. It's a very refreshing change, declared OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. I think it's going to set us up for a long period of leading the world, and that wouldn't be happening without your leadership. If ever a scene embodied the Communist Manifesto's maxim that the executive of the modern state is but a committee for managing the common affairs of the whole bourgeoisie, it was Thursday's conclave of technology oligarchs at the White House. It demonstrated conclusively that Trump's efforts to establish a dictatorship in the United States serves the interests of the financial oligarchy, and that the targets of this dictatorship are the workers whose labor creates the oligarchy's wealth. Among those present were Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, the second largest company in the world, with a market capitalization of $3.6 trillion. Sam Altman of Microsoft proxy OpenAI was also present, along with former chairman and CEO Bill Gates, net worth $122 billion. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, the third largest company in the world, with a market capitalization of $3.5 trillion. Sundar Pichai, CEO of Alphabet, Google, the fourth largest company in the world, with a market capitalization of $2.8 trillion. Google co-founder Sergey Brin, with a net worth of $191 billion, was also present. David Limp, CEO of Blue Origin, attended on behalf of Jeff Bezos, net worth $256 billion, and his company, Amazon, the fifth largest corporation in the world, with a market capitalization of $2.4 trillion. Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Meta, Facebook, the sixth largest corporation in the world, with a market capitalization of $1.8 trillion. Zuckerberg is the third wealthiest man in the world, with a net worth of $263 billion. Inside the White House, a newly gilded Rococo ballroom seated 30 men and women representing corporations with a market capitalization greater than the gross domestic product of every country in the world except the United States. Outside, the streets of the American capital were patrolled by armed and masked soldiers, gripping assault rifles and supported by armored vehicles mounted with gun turrets, amid Trump's occupation of major American cities as part of his effort to establish a dictatorship. The world inside and the world outside the White House collided in the words of Brin, who praised the civil rights work of the administration in Venezuela. He was referring to the murder of 11 people just days earlier in international waters by a flotilla of American gunboats, which marked a new high watermark in Trump's use of illegal summary mass execution with no legal precedent of any sort. Having presided at Trump's inauguration ceremony, in which he took office by capitalizing on the collapse of support for the incumbent Democratic Party, the technology oligarchs gathered once again to consecrate Trump's self-coronation as king and dictator of America. In exchange, Trump gave his full blessing for the initiative of the technology companies to integrate artificial intelligence, run on their servers, their consumer hardware, and their software into all aspects of social and economic life, paving the way for an economic restructuring that is expected to destroy 800 million jobs by 2030. The meeting was timed for what was, for the technology executives, a propitious occasion. 2 days earlier, a U.S. district court judge ruled in favor of Google and Apple in a landmark antitrust case. Google, the fourth largest company in the world, would be allowed to keep its monopoly on internet search, and Apple, the hardware monopolist and third largest company in the world, would be allowed to keep receiving monopoly rent from Google for making it the default search engine on its phones and computers. Trump congratulated Google and Apple on their very good day, condemning his predecessor, former President Joe Biden, as being the one that prosecuted that lawsuit. The very good day for America's technology monopolies was only the latest in a series of such good days. Since 2012, the so-called Magnificent Seven technology companies, five of whom were represented at the dinner, have seen their share of the S&P 500 stock index rise from just over 7% in 2012 to 34%. In 2012, their market capitalization stood at just $1.1 trillion. Today, their combined market capitalization has surged over 15-fold to $19 trillion. The investment strategist Michael Hartnett, who coined the term Magnificent Seven, explained the processes that gave rise to this vast enrichment of this small number of companies. So what you've created this decade is a flow of capital, out of small into large cap, out of every sector into technology, and into anything that has a monopolistic ability to ensure that its sales, its earnings, and of course, its balance sheets remain dominant. It has been, in other words, a decade of massive consolidation of monopoly power at the heights of the American financial oligarchy, all of which found its consummation Wednesday at the White House. Virtually the same group of technology executives prominently flanked Trump at his inauguration. In the 7 months since Inauguration Day, the market capitalization of those major technology companies has risen by a further $3 trillion. The open endorsement of Trump by these leading representatives is all the more significant in that Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon all disproportionately donated to the Democratic Party up through the last election cycle, according to OpenSecrets.org. The embrace of Trump's dictatorship by the oligarchy is the reason why their hirelings in the Democratic Party have done nothing to oppose Trump's efforts to initiate a dictatorship. The basic fact is that the vast wealth piled up by the financial oligarchy is built on a mountain of worthless paper. If power were really measured in market capitalization, then the men and women in that room are 10 times stronger than they were a decade ago. But all of that vast wealth is valued in dollars, and dollars are valued in nothing. The power and preeminence of American imperialism is not predicated on productive capacity, but by its position in the global economic order. And the American state and the dollars it prints are bankrupt. Every dollar racked up by the oligarchs is either a dollar borrowed or a dollar typed into a spreadsheet at the Federal Reserve. If the house of cards they have constructed is to be kept standing, it must be through the constant immiseration of the working class, both in the United States and internationally, and the colonial domination of the globe. But the working class will have its own say. To date, the mass protests against the Trump administration have been dominated by sections of the middle class. We are now at an inflection point in which the seat of struggle will shift to the factories, where the AI-fueled bloodbath will lead to the destruction of countless jobs, speed-ups, and attacks in working conditions. Coupled with a systematic onslaught against Medicare, Social Security, and other entitlement programs. Central to the development of working-class opposition must be the conception, seared into the mind of every class-conscious worker, that in fighting Trump, they are fighting the capitalist oligarchy on behalf of which he speaks, and that the struggle against the Trump administration is the struggle against the capitalist system on behalf of which he rules.
Nearly 500 workers rounded up in massive immigration raid at Hyundai plant in Georgia. By Jacob Cross. On Thursday, multiple federal agencies, including Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, a division of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, carried out a massive immigration raid on the Hyundai Motor Group Metaplant American campus in Ellabelle, Georgia. According to HSI, the fascistic raid resulted in the kidnapping of 475 workers. In a press conference on Friday, Stephen Schrank, the special agent in charge of HSI in Georgia, said it was the largest single-site raid in the agency's history. Schrank claimed the workers had either entered the U.S. illegally, overstayed their visas, or were violating their visas by working. He stated that most of those arrested were from Korea, and that they had already been transported to an ICE concentration camp in Folkestone, Georgia. The 7.6 billion complex is located in the town of Ellabelle, outside of Savannah, Georgia. Its 2,900-acre campus includes an electric vehicle plant and a still-under-construction lithium battery cell manufacturing facility, the latter of which was the specific target premises in a warrant unsealed on Friday. Notably, the warrant only listed four quote-unquote target persons to be searched, none of whom appear to be Korean. However, it also granted federal agents authority to seize, quote, all records, end quote, on the premises related to employment and identity, a sweeping authorization that was used as the pretext for the mass detention of nearly 500 workers. The factory is a joint venture between Hyundai Motor and LG Energy Solution. After receiving a $2 billion handout from the Georgia state government, Hyundai pledged to employ 8,500 workers at the facility by 2031. According to company and U.S. government officials, many of the detained workers were employed by subcontractors. Thursday's raid is the latest in a series of mass workplace roundups earlier this year, including raids at meatpacking plants in Iowa, a student housing concentration site in Florida, and multiple ICE operations outside Home Depot locations in Los Angeles County. These large-scale workplace raids give the lie to Trump's claims that immigration police operations are directed towards criminals and murderers. As of August 24th, ICE reported 61,225 individuals in their custody, the vast majority, 43,021, 70.3%, have no criminal convictions. Of the 30% with criminal convictions, the majority are nonviolent or minor offenses, such as traffic violations. Following the mass police operation, Yvonne Brooks, president of the Georgia AFL-CIO, issued a perfunctory statement declaring the raid quote-unquote politically motivated and adding, quote, arresting and detaining workers who are exploited every day and risk their lives every day on the job creates an atmosphere of fear that terrorizes workers and their families and increases the workload burden of their co-workers, end quote. Brooks's remarks are revealing. Far from calling for any action to defend the hundreds of workers rounded up, she reduces the attack to the inconvenience of, quote, increased workload burden, end quote, for those left behind. Such statements underscore the true function of the union apparatus: to tamp down workers' outrage, limit their response to passive complaints, and maintain the bureaucrats' political alliance with the Democratic Party. In the face of mass roundups and deportations, the unions categorically refuse to call for strike action or organize any genuine resistance. Will Lehman, a Mack Trucks worker and socialist who ran for UAW president in 2022, issued the following statement in response to the Georgia Hyundai raid. Quote, I denounce this barbaric raid and demand the immediate release of all workers who have been rounded up by the immigration Gestapo. This is not only an attack on immigrant workers, it is an attack on the entire working class. If the government can use flimsy warrants naming four people to justify flex cuffing nearly 500, then it will use the same methods against citizen workers who resist attacks on their jobs, living standards, and democratic rights. We have already seen this year how the Trump administration stripped union protections from nearly a million federal workers. What is happening to immigrants today will be used against all of us tomorrow. The nationalist trade union bureaucracies, including the AFL-CIO and UAW, have not called for a single strike to defend immigrant workers, jobs, or basic democratic rights. They have once again proven themselves an arm of the corporations and the state. That is why workers must build new organizations, rank-and-file defense committees in every factory and job site. The International Workers Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees fights to unite workers across all borders, languages, and nationalities in a common fight. I call on workers to come to the defense of our class brothers and sisters seized in the Hyundai raid, demand their release, and mobilize in opposition to the escalating assault on immigrant workers throughout the country. End quote. The Georgia Hyundai raid marks a new stage in the offensive against the working class. Flimsy warrants and anti-immigrant chauvinism are being used to justify mass roundups, detentions, and deportations. The raid exposes the fraud of the trade union bureaucracies who respond to the most brazen attacks with mealy-mouthed statements about, quote-unquote, workload burdens while refusing to call any strike action. Their role is not to defend workers, but to suppress the class struggle and preserve their own privileges by binding workers to the Democratic Party, which is just as committed as Trump to mass deportations, capitalism, and war. Against this, the working class must advance its own independent perspective. The attack on immigrants is the spearhead of a broader assault on the entire working class. The defense of immigrant workers is inseparable from the defense of democratic rights, jobs, and living standards for the entire working class. The answer lies not in the nationalist poison of the union apparatus, but in the unification of workers across all borders in a common struggle for socialism. Israel destroys high-rise buildings in Gaza City as final genocidal offensive nears. By Kevin Reed. As Israel prepares a massive assault on Gaza City, the Palestinians who remain in the area have been subjected to a new round of destructive airstrikes that are wiping out entire residential blocks and sending new waves of panic and desperation throughout the population. On Friday, Israeli forces struck the Mushtaha Tower, one of the tallest buildings in Gaza City, with at least three projectiles, reducing the 12-story high-rise to rubble. Verified footage and reports from ABC News show the tower collapsing in a cloud of dust, with the shockwaves from the strike shaking tent encampments surrounding it, where hundreds of displaced Palestinians had been sheltering. According to eyewitnesses, the military used an evacuation order just 15 minutes before the strike, leaving many families camped around the building with nowhere to go. The force of the explosion overturned tents and caused panic as people fled. Doctors at Al-Shifa Hospital described being overwhelmed by the number of dead and injured. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud, reporting from Gaza City, said, quote, "The destruction is the systematic erasure of homes, memories, and their community. The city is being leveled, and with it, their future is torn down one tower at a time. End quote. Hospital personnel reported that it was impossible for the residents and displaced people in the tower and its vicinity to escape in the short time given. The building's management said the building was filled with civilians. Israeli projectiles have also struck other residential high-rises, and further attacks are expected as military officials advance the offensive against Gaza City. The measures being taken now by the Israel Defense Forces, IDF, can only be described as bloody terror. Fear and desperation among the population are being deliberately brought to new levels in the barbaric genocide that has been unleashed on Palestinians since October 2023. Israel is wiping out the skyline of the largest city in Gaza in preparation for a massive ground invasion. Israeli officials have justified these attacks on residential buildings on the grounds that they are used by Hamas for quote-unquote military operations. Defense Minister Israel Katz, in statements made on social media and reported by numerous media outlets, declared, "Now the bolt is being removed from all the gates of hell in Gaza. When the door opens, it will not close and IDF activity will increase until the Hamas murderers and rapists accept Israel's condition for ending the war, primarily the release of all hostages and disarmament, or they will be destroyed." Katz has issued multiple warnings that Gaza City will meet the same fate as Rafah and Beit Hanun, which have been essentially turned into rubble by prior offensives. Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir confirmed Friday that IDF activity in Gaza is being quote-unquote expanded. "It is undeniable that the Zionist war criminals, with the backing of U.S. and European imperialism, have no intention to end the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from Gaza under any circumstances." The fascist Katz and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have made it clear that no matter what happens, the aim is to completely seize the Gaza Strip and that there will be nothing left of Palestine. In the past several days, Israeli airstrikes and fire have killed dozens of civilians in and around the Gaza City, including at least 18 people, 7 of them children, in overnight attacks on Friday. Reports from the Palestinian Health Ministry and hospitals on the ground confirmed that many of the dead were women and children, their bodies recovered from tents and makeshift shelters destroyed in the strikes. Several more were killed in missile attacks on other high-rise buildings and in the sprawling Mawasi zone, where many Palestinians have sought safety. In just the last two nights alone, over 50 people have been killed across the Gaza Strip. According to an Associated Press report and statements from local health authorities, many of those killed in recent strikes, shootings, and stampedes were attempting to access desperately needed aid at food distribution points or airdrop supplies. Since May, several hundred Palestinians have died from Israeli gunfire while approaching aid convoys or distribution centers, often after being forced from their homes repeatedly by military operations. The UN and humanitarian agencies have documented how Israel has made the safe delivery of humanitarian aid nearly impossible through blockades and by directly attacking aid-seeking crowds, and that this is a part of a strategic plan cooked up in the cooperation with the White House of Donald Trump. The deliberate policy of starvation continues as a weapon in what international human rights groups have characterized as genocide. A global hunger monitor officially declared that famine conditions now exist in northern Gaza, a revelation Israel has denied despite overwhelming evidence. According to the UN, over 20,000 children have been treated for acute malnutrition. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have denounced the Israeli government for its use of starvation as a weapon of war and for imposing conditions calculated to bring about the physical destruction of the Palestinian people. Amnesty's recent report stated, Israel has continued to use starvation of civilians as a weapon of war against Palestinians in the occupied Gaza Strip and to deliberately impose conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction as part of its ongoing genocide. The criminality of these measures is multiplied by ongoing restrictions on water, fuel, food, and medicine, the destruction of infrastructure, and the refusal to permit adequate humanitarian access to a desperate and exhausted population. Human Rights Watch condemned the Israeli attacks on residential towers, declaring the destruction of civilian infrastructure, forced displacement of residents, and collective punishment of Gaza's people constitute war crimes. Amnesty International issued a statement that said, starving civilian populations, raising their homes, and attacking aid distribution points are crimes under international law. Behind the death and devastation in Gaza stands a detailed, quote-unquote, post-war plan developed in close collaboration between the Israeli government and the Trump administration, with critical roles played by Israeli businessmen, the Boston Consulting Group, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Fund, and the Tony Blair Institute. This scheme, as reported by investigative journalists, aims to sweep Gaza clear of its Palestinian population and turn the strip into a quote-unquote seaside resort for Western and Israeli business interests. The plan entails massive new privatization of land and resources, the introduction of special economic zones controlled by foreign investors, and the permanent exclusion of the native population with the blessing and logistical support of the U.S. and Israeli militaries. While publicly couched as quote-unquote humanitarian reconstruction, the real intent is obvious. Ethnic cleansing, economic exploitation, and the utter erasure of Palestinian national rights, engineered by figures like the war criminal Tony Blair and implemented at the direction of the financial and corporate elites behind U.S. and Israeli policy. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website at wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Jesse Thomas.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.